Shri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopa Da Shama Kanda Radha Pati Kiri Gopa Dhan Ki Jai Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Navadav Dham Ki Jai Ganga Jumana Tulsi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Nanda Gauri Vaishnava Vrindi Ki Jai Sama Vetta Bhakti Vrindi Ki Jai Go Prema Nandi All glories to Samadha Bodhis, all glories to Samadha Bodhis, all glories to Samadha Bodhis, all glories to Shri Guru Chikaranga, all glories to the Pope. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namaste, Saraswara Devi, Gauravani Prachala Nayana, Vasesha Sanyavadi Pasa, Chadesha Tarare. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadanda Shrusti Gaurakshya Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Kumkhyana Bhaya Srimadha Chandras Parthin Shri Sukhova Chaita Vada Anuvada Pari Vashaya Pratu Giriya Munivar Upa Samasila Upa Rata Ratana Mya Nimitta Upabokena Karma Ramdam Vyapana Yan Ranjayana Mahi Yatovaha. Sukadeva Goswami said, oh Maharaj Parikshit, when King Rahogana chastised the exalted devotee Jadava with harsh words, that peaceful, saintly person tolerated it and replied properly, nescience is due to the bodily conception. Jadava was not affected by this false conception. Out of his natural humility, he never considered himself a great devotee and agreed to suffer the results of his past karma. Like an ordinary man, he thought that by carrying the palanquin, he was destroying the reactions of his past misdeeds. Thinking in this way, he began to carry the palanquin as before. Purport, an exalted devotee, the Lord never thinks that he is a paramahamsa or a liberated person. He always remains a humble servant of the Lord. In all reverse conditions, he agrees to suffer the results of his past life. He never accuses the Lord of putting him into a distressed condition. These are the signs of an exalted devotee, tatenu kampamsa samikshamana. When suffering reverse conditions, the devotee always considers that the reverse conditions are the Lord's concessions. He is never angry with his master. He is always satisfied with the position his master offers. In any case, he continues performing his duty in devotional service. Such a person is guaranteed promotion back home, back to Godhead. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Tatenu Kampamsa Samikshamana Vajana Eva Amakratam Vipakam Hidvagva Purvir Vidhananda Vaste Javetiyo Bhukti Pade Sadaya Bhag. My dear Lord, one who constantly waits for your causeless mercy to be bestowed upon him and who goes on suffering the reaction of his past misdeeds, offers you respectful obeisances from the core of his heart. He surely eligible for liberation for his being his rightful claim. Sukadeva goes on to continue. O best of the Pandu dynasty, the king of Sindhu and Salvira states, had great faith in the discussions of the absolute truth. Being thus qualified, he heard from Jambara that Vidasapa presentation, which is approved by all scriptures on the mystic yoga process, and which slackens the knot in the heart. His material conception of himself as a king was thus destroyed. He immediately descended from his palanquin and fell flat on the ground with his head at the lotus feet of Jambara in such a way that he might be excused for his insulting words against the great Brahmana. He then prayed as follows. Purport in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says the supreme signs were thus received through James. In disciplic succession, the same thing is understood that way, but in the course of time, the succession is broken, and therefore the signs as it is appears to be lost. Through the disciplic succession, the royal order was on the same platform as greatly saintly persons. Formerly, they could understand the philosophy of life and knew how to train the citizens to come to the same standard. In other words, they knew how to deliver citizens from the entanglement of birth and death. The Maharaj Dasarath ruled Ayodhya, the great sage Vishwamitra once came to him to take away Lord Ramchandra and locked him into the forest to kill a demon. When the saintly person Vishwamitra came to the court of Maharaj Dasarath, the king, in order to receive the saintly person, asked him, Ahishtam yat Tat Punar Janma Jayaya. He asked the sage whether everything was going on well in his endeavor to conquer the repetition of birth and death. The whole process of Vedic civilization is based on this point. We must know how to conquer the repetition of birth and death. Maharaj Ruhuguna also knew the purpose of life. Therefore, when Jatabharata put the philosophy of life before him, he immediately appreciated it. This is the foundation of Vedic society. Learned scholars, brahmanas, saintly persons, and sages who are fully aware of the Vedic purpose advise the royal order how to benefit the general masses, and by the cooperation the general masses were benefited. Therefore, everything was successful. Maharaj Ruhuguna attained this perfection of understanding the value of human life. Therefore, he regretted his insulting words to Jatabharata and immediately descended from his palanquin and fell down at the lotus feet of Jatabharata in order to be excused and to hear from him further about the values of life known as Brahmajigyasa. At the present moment, high government officials are ignorant of the values of life, and when saintly persons endeavor to broadcast the Vedic knowledge, the so-called executives do not offer the respectful obeisance to the title of struck the spiritual propaganda. Thus, one can say that the former kingly government was like heaven and the present government is like hell. So, here we see the reaction of King Ruhuguna. So actually, though previously he was described in rather negative terms as being proud and identifying with his body as a king, we see by this description of his reaction that actually he had great appreciation for the words of Jatabharata, and he could distinguish the difference between body and soul. So in other words, the words were not lost on him. He actually understood what Jatabharata was saying. So in this way, he was actually not a condemned king, but actually a proper king who was ruling according to proper principles and had some knowledge of spiritual life. So therefore, on his part, he regretted his insulting behavior and wanted to know more from Jatabharata, and therefore he gave him respect to counteract his offenses. So he also understood the value of respecting devotees of the Lord, and also understood the nature of aparada and how it can destroy one's devotion. So therefore he regretted his past activity and offered his apologies to Jatabharata. Jatabharata, on the other hand, after he had spoken, he simply felt that he should go on with his activity of carrying the palanquin, as if this was his karma, that he had to suffer a certain type of insulting behavior and also to be engaged in this work of carrying the king's palanquin. So, as Prabhupada mentions in the purport, he did not consider himself an elevated person. He considered himself a person affected by karma. We know, on the other hand, that this was not so. He was a very elevated person and was completely detached from everything in the material world. So therefore, his karmas were all destroyed. This is the nature of the devotee. And to show this, we have this quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam, Tatenu Kampansu Shamano, that when there is suffering, the devotee, no matter what stage he's at, whether he's an immature devotee or a mature devotee or advanced devotee or in prema, they see that suffering as the Lord's mercy. And that that suffering is a result of one's own activities in the past or karma. In other words, we create conditions so that we suffer in the present. So in other words, our suffering is self-made. And we don't blame others. Yeah? And of course, the nature of karma is such that because we produce it, therefore we understand this is the mercy of the Lord on us to help us correct ourselves. We get a just punishment for our own mistakes, and the devotee realizes, I've done some mistake in the past, and this is the result. And therefore he takes this as the Lord's mercy, as an opportunity for him to correct himself, instead of blaming other people. Doing this at the same time, the devotee does not give up serving the Supreme Lord. So therefore it says, Shri Bhagavata, year be to done, namaste. He offers his respects to the Lord by body, words, and mind. So he's completely absorbed in service to the Lord. So though he suffers in the material world, he does not stop his devotion, he continues his devotion uninterrupted, understanding that he's a self-creator, whatever, and he doesn't blame the Lord at all and become disturbed by that. So that attitude is proper, and therefore it says that this is the person who gets the mercy of the Lord. The Lord becomes very merciful to that person who tolerates his position in the material world and continues his devotional service, considering himself very fallen, and that he deserves all of this type of suffering in the world. So that person is the object of the Lord's mercy. The opposite type of person, we can assume, will not get the Lord's mercy is that person who will stop his devotional service. And he'll say, what kind of Lord is this who gives me all the suffering in the material world? He creates problems for me. Why should I worship this person? People are harassing me. People are causing problems to me. I'm getting all sorts of problems in the material world. Why doesn't the Lord stop any of this? That would be mercy. But he doesn't show mercy to me, so why I should worship him? In other words, he blames the Lord, and he puts no fault on himself for his suffering at the present time. And he stops his whatever devotional service he's doing. So the actual devotee continues his devotion in spite of all the suffering and whatever in the material world, and thinks of it as his results of his previous activities. So that's exactly the mentality here of Jatabara, where he says that, oh, I earned this due to my past karma. My enjoyment of my past karma is caused by my previous mistakes. On the other hand, we also know that as a devotee advances, his karmas are destroyed. So we really cannot take a very advanced devotee and bhava and prema to be suffering from karma anymore. It has to be something else. So nevertheless, the devotee considers himself very fallen and says, I'm still suffering from karma and whatnot. So if he is on that advanced stage and he has no karma, why would he suffer at all? So we see many cases like this. We see the Pandavas suffering in the forest or whatever, even Nityasuddha devotees. So sometimes it is arrangement of the Lord for particular purposes to illustrate certain things in his pastimes, that he may make arrangements like this. So it is, we don't blame the Pandavas for their past karma, for getting in that position of being banished to the forest for 13 years or whatever. No, it is some arrangement of the Supreme Lord. Or similarly, we find that Parikshit getting cursed and dying in 7 days, that's not his karma. Rather, that's another arrangement of the Supreme Lord. So here also, we can assume that Jadbar is free from karma and is actually beyond that. But this is an arrangement of the Supreme Lord to have these teachings revealed. This as with Parikshit, the chance was there for Sukadev to speak to Parikshit. So here we have an arrangement between Rahugana and Jagvara. So they have a conversation and Jagvara gives some valuable teachings to him. So for advanced devotees, we should understand that the karma aspect is no longer there. Though the devotee himself may attribute his suffering to karma. So we cannot believe his words in one sense. So he is saying this out of great humility, and considering himself very, very fallen. Those on the lesser position, of course, may have residual karmas. Those who are not up to a sakti stage may have vestiges of karma, whatever. Or even they may not have karmas. So even in the case of Ajumil, it is said all of his karmas were destroyed by chanting the Lord's name once. So whatever he underwent after that was not his karma anymore. So, as explained, this is an appearance of karma only. So the Lord sometimes, even for less advanced devotees, destroys all the karma. But there's something that looks like karma in the sense of different incidents and suffering, etc., that the devotee may have to undergo for some period of time. So that is not also karma. That is an arrangement again of the Supreme Lord or of the Holy Name. So we can ask, why would he do that? Why would the Lord make arrangements like that? The answer is that the Lord and the Holy Name sometimes hide the power of the name and bhakti. So there's looks like this ordinary person again in the material world, in spite of the fact that actually he's destroyed his karmas already. So it's an appearance of being an ordinary person in the material world, arranged by the Supreme Lord and his process of devotional service. So, therefore, the what appears to be karma always isn't karma for the devotees, and especially, of course, for very advanced devotees, definitely is not karma. Karma, of course, may affect devotees if they still have some traces of aparad, etc. This will slow the process of destruction of karma. So therefore, even up to asakti, there may be traces of karma still manifesting in a devotee. Nevertheless, through the stages of anartha, vritti, nishtha, ruchi, and asakti, the karmas are gradually destroyed. So it's not that if they're not completely gone, it's not a fault also. It's just simply the process is gradual in that sense. So in all cases, process of bhakti works for the devotees, and what to speak of persons like Ajumil, who wasn't even a devotee, but there may be some appearance of karma. In any case, if the devotee suffers, still he will think, yes, this is my karma, this is what I deserve, so this is the Lord's mercy. And he does not show hostility towards the Lord for that, and he continues his process of devotional service, even though may not be karma at all or whatever. So it's actually the attitude of the devotee which is important, and that is that he does not blame the Lord for anything, and he simply continues the process of devotional service, the great devotion, and doesn't interrupt that devotion at all because of the external events that are happening to his material body. So this is the cause of the Lord showing mercy to the devotee.
Maharaj, if a devotee is engaged in a particular service, like we see in case of Parikshit Maharaj, he did not protest when he was cursed. So when, for example, a devotee is engaged in a particular service and by a certain section of devotees he is criticized for certain execution of service for various reasons. So what are devotees' responsibility of duty is? Would he try to address those issues, or would he continue with this service? Because in case of Parikshit, he did not protest whatever happened to him. He accepted it and he continued after that.
Well, in any case, the process of bhakti doesn't stop in case of Parikshit also. And now no one interrupted his devotional service. He was just cursed to die. And he didn't protest that at all, or whatever. One such way to say, well, yeah, he stopped his devotional service, he stopped his life. But because it was the curse of a Brahmana, he did not want to interrupt that, he respected the Brahmana, etc. So he didn't do anything in that case. In the case of ordinary devotees, It would depend again on the circumstances of exactly what type of interruption of their service or whatever. If there is good cause for correction, obviously one can try to correct oneself in one's devotional service if there is some fault, so that's not a problem.
Sometimes we find some situation chakra, good to, theoretically it's good. Sometimes we find practically the following the deeper life we do. Where there are business and there's no power. We keep ruling, but that is in some situation.
Well, that is the nature of the which they fall on jivas, that they cannot take the instruction properly and apply it. But that is actually what has to be done. So therefore, for instance, Arjuna says, oh, it's difficult to control the mind. So yes, it is. But then Krishna says, well, if you want to advance, then you have to control the mind, that's all. So if you don't want it, that's fine, don't do anything and continue to act as you act and nothing will happen, that's all. And if you want to change things and you want to improve your position, then you're going to have to do something, you're going to have to follow the instructions. Even if it is uncomfortable for you, you have to surrender to those instructions and follow them. Otherwise, if you're not going to advance, nothing's going to happen. So at a certain point, the jiva has to seriously apply the instructions of the scripture. So that is why Krishna says, therefore, abhyasena dukhantaya vairagyena nivrutyate. Yes, it's very difficult, but then you have to keep practicing and practicing and practicing. So you follow the rule, and even though you're not perfect, you keep following and following and following it, and eventually you can do it. So things are difficult, but by practice it becomes easy. And if you don't practice, then of course don't expect any results, that's all.
Sometimes in conversation with other devotees, can be examples of Prabhupada and the great devotees. But they are because the spirit devotees, they can follow. I am very followed, I can't follow.
Well, the idea is that, Krishna is not talking to Nityasiddhas. Yes, he was talking to Arjuna, who is a Nityasiddha, but Arjuna was taking the position of not being a Nityasiddha. I'm simply a fallen soul, I can't practice yoga, I can't practice mind control, it's too difficult. But he's beyond that, actually. But he's saying that. So therefore, as a fallen soul, and therefore Krishna answers as taking as a fallen soul, says you have to practice. But of course, Arjuna is not doing sadhana at all. He addresses them that you have to practice. So we can make excuses, which means I don't want to do any sadhana. That's all it means, basically. Yeah, if we avoid the sadhana, and then of course nothing happens. We stay in the material world, that's all.
Maharaj, in case of Arjuna, it was because at the time when Yamdutas came, his anxiety increased, and in that intensity when he called out the names, actually Vishnudutas appeared. So, but we already know that his actually was not having any balanced karma.
Yeah, before that.
So in any case, the Yamdutas couldn't have touched him.
No. Even if the Vishnudutas didn't come, the Yamadutas couldn't do anything to him, technically speaking. Yeah, that may be there, but that doesn't mean that we should stop our bhakti because of that. So yes, we may not be able to practice perfectly, but that's the nature of anishchita bhakti, that it is not steady or whatever, but nevertheless, we don't stop the vow, or whatever vows we may, we still continue anyway.
How can it be that reason that I'm very attached to the service, well, I can do it and something interests me, I'm not able to concentrate on the sadhana? If one feels that, oh, only I can do this service. When doing the service, some interruption comes, and he feels not able to do the sadhana. He's very attached to the service.
Well, the different types of service are also part of sadhana, we have to take that. At the same time, we do have certain basic vows we have, so those we also have to keep. That's also part of our sadhana, so we have to be intelligent enough to balance those things out. Both are purifying, and both are bhakti. Of course, if we do it properly, If we do it improperly and we're not thinking in terms of bhakti, then of course the results are minimal. So if we don't have this anukulyan Krishna silanam attitude and we do these services full of pride and with some material motive, then of course it's not actually bhakti. So then the results are quite different. It's not a sadhana anymore, technically. It's an appearance of sadhana, but it doesn't have that result. So it would only be problematic in the end for that person. But if they're both done with the proper attitude, they're both part of sadhana, so there should be no conflict. But we still have our basic vows we have to keep, and we cannot forget those.
Thank you.